Have you ever gotten one of those messages? Maybe a text, maybe an email that's just weirdly specific, kind of cryptic, makes you stop and go, huh, what's that about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like a little puzzle lands right in your lap and you feel like you have to solve it.
Well, that's pretty much our starting point for this deep dive. We got this really intriguing message from someone in Shawnee, Oklahoma, and they were completely perplexed about something called YMCA TIF money, supposedly being used for a project there.
Right. It sounds official, but yeah, what is it?
Exactly. And the core of their confusion was, you know, nobody's ever heard of a 501c3, that's the IRS designation for a nonprofit, getting to some special kind of TIF money called YMCA TIF.
Yeah, that specific naming, YMCA TIF, just sounds off, like a public financing tool named after a private group. It immediately raises questions.
It really does. And it shines a light on how easily, you know, informal talk can create these official sounding terms that aren't legally established, especially when you mix public funding with community projects.
Mm-hmm. Happens all the time.
So our mission today is to demystify tax increment financing, or TIF, for you. We want to clarify whether a YMCA TIF district actually exists in Shawnee.
And also shed some light on the bigger picture there, right? Public land management, transparency, stuff like that.
Exactly. We've dug into official city documents, lease agreements, public meeting minutes, recent inquiries, the whole lot.
So we're going to give you the nuts and bolts.
Yep. The real world impacts, and hopefully empower you to understand how development unfolds, maybe even in your own community.
Okay, let's unpack it then.
Right. Let's tackle the central question head on. Does an official YMCA TIF district exist in Shawnee?
And the answer is?
Well, after digging through project folders, Shawnee Minutes data, city records, public ordinances, including those specific ones, CS 2017-06 and CS 2022-10, we confirmed no.
Just a flat no.
A flat no. There is no official designation of a YMCA TIF district. It doesn't appear in any formal capacity in any official city records we could find.
Huh. That's pretty definitive. So if there's no official YMCA TIF, why do you think that specific phrase YMCA TIF money was floating around? It clearly caused some real confusion.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it probably boils down to a few things. Could be a simple misunderstanding of how TIF works, which is, let's be honest, kind of complex.
It can be.
Or maybe an unofficial nickname people started using because the YMCA project itself is pretty prominent in town.
Or, and this is maybe where it gets tricky, could it be a reference to money from an existing general TIF fund potentially being directed towards the YMCA project, even without its own district?
That's a really important nuance, yeah. That's possible. But the key takeaway here is just how easily informal talk can create these official-sounding names that aren't really legal entities.
That makes perfect sense. That gap between, you know, coffee shop talk and actual city ordinances. But what's interesting is, even though this YMCA TIF district isn't official, the actual project at the Shawnee YMCA is very real, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Very real and sounds pretty important. The Shawnee YMCA is actively working to build a childcare facility,
which is a huge need in so many places.
Definitely. And they're partnering with the Oklahoma Department of Human Services, OKDHS, and several other state groups focused on early childhood development.
So it's a real project addressing a real community need. Does it have real funding, too, not just plans?
It does. We confirm there's a $1 million grant from OKDHS.
Wow. Okay. $1 million.
Yeah. Plus additional support from the Potts Family Foundation and Smart Start Central Oklahoma. So substantial backing.
Got it. So confirmed funding sources are in place, and it sounds like it has political support, too.
It does, yeah. We saw positive statements from people like former Mayor Ed Bolt and State Representative Del Curbs, who represent Shawnee.
So the project's moving forward. It has real money, just not from a thing called the YMCA TIF.
Exactly. Which brings us to the basic question.
Yeah.
What is tax increment financing, or TIF? For anyone listening who isn't familiar with this this economic development tool.
Right. It sounds complicated, but the basic idea is pretty clever. It's essentially a way for cities to fund development in specific areas that need a boost, right, without raising general taxes across the board.
Precisely. But the real genius of TIF, or maybe its biggest draw, isn't just funding projects. It's about making growth itself pay for the infrastructure that enables more growth.
Okay, like a self-funding loop.
Kinda, yeah. But it comes with risks. Here's how it works. First, a specific area is designated as a TIF district. The city then freezes the current total property value in that district. That's the base year valuation.
Like taking a financial snapshot in time for just that zone?
Exactly. For Shawnee's downtown TIFF, for instance, that base value was about $35 million, set back in 2016.
And the property taxes from that original $35 million, they just keep flowing like normal to the city, schools, county?
Yep. That existing tax money keeps going where it always did. No change there. But then, when development happens and property values rise above that frozen base.
Ah, that's the key part.
That's where the increment comes in. The increment is the additional property tax revenue generated just from that increase in property value above the frozen base.
So if the value jumps from $35 million to, say, $50 million, the property tax on that extra $15 million, that's the increment.
Exactly. And that increment money is special, right? It doesn't just get tossed into the general city pot.
No, and this is really critical for accountability. That increment money goes into a separate, legally segregated TIF fund. It's specifically for approved projects within that district.
Like a dedicated lockbox.
Precisely. A lockbox just for that TIF district. It cannot be used for, you know, paving streets on the other side of town or general city services.
Okay, that makes sense for keeping things focused. But big projects, sewers, roads, they cost a lot up front. How do cities pay for that stuff before the property values have really jumped and generated that increment?
Good question. That's where bonding comes in. Cities can issue bonds, which is basically borrowing money.
Based on
the anticipated future TIF increment revenues. They're projecting that growth will happen and the TIF will generate enough money over time to pay back the loan.
So they can kickstart those big projects right away.
Exactly. Site prep, water lines, street improvements, things that make the area attractive for development. The future TIF revenues pay back those bonds.
So they're betting on future growth to finance today's development. Did Shawnee use bonding for its TIFs?
They did. Shawnee's downtown TIF was authorized for up to $1 million in bonds, and the Industrial Park TIF had a bigger authorization, up to $2 million. It gives them that upfront financial muscle.
Conceptually, it sounds pretty appealing. Spark development, growth pays for itself, no new taxes on existing folks. What's the catch?
Well, it definitely has big pros. Targeted reinvestment is huge. It focuses resources on areas that might otherwise get ignored by private investors. It can be a powerful catalyst.
Public money signals confidence, encourages private developers.
Exactly. But like any powerful tool, it has risks and criticisms.
Okay, so what are the potential downsides? What's the biggest argument against using TIF?
I'd say the biggest risk is often overly optimistic forecasting. What if that expected growth doesn't happen as fast or as much as they predicted?
Then the city might struggle to pay back the bonds.
Right. That could lead to financial strain. And then there's the perception issue. Some argue that even though it's new revenue from the increment, it's still money that could have eventually gone to the general fund for citywide services if the TIF wasn't capturing it.
Ah, the but-for argument. Would this development have happened anyway without the TIF?
That's the classic debate. And taking on debt through bonds always carries its own long-term obligations and risks. It needs careful management.
Definitely. So, okay, that gives us a solid foundation on TIF, the potential, the risks. How has Shawnee actually put this tool to work? You said they have two official TIF districts.
That's right. Two official TIFs, both enabled by state law. The downtown TIF district and the industrial park TIF district. Very different areas, very different goals.
Let's start with the downtown one. When was that set up?
That was Ordinance CS 2017-06, back in June 2017, designed to revitalize the city center. It has a 20-year term, and that base valuation we mentioned was $35 million from 2016.
And was the public involved early on?
It seems so, which is crucial for these things. In December 2017, records show 8 citizens actually testified about expanding the boundaries, and the council listened. They adopted an ordinance to do just that, unanimously, too.
Okay, so some early engagement. What happened next?
Well, by September 2018, the planning staff reported the TIF fund was doing pretty well. It had an $820,000 balance already.
That kind of early success probably gets people's attention.
It did. Prompted 5 more speakers to come forward asking for more transparency. You know, how exactly is this money being used?
And how did the city respond to that?
They listened again. The council passed resolution 2018-R15, though this one wasn't unanimous, 5-2 vote. But it significantly increased the money available for facade improvement grants.
Helping businesses fix up their storefronts.
Right. And importantly, it formalized quarterly financial reporting on the TIF's performance. So a direct response to that public feedback for more clarity.
Okay. Good example of the process working. But how did it actually perform? Financially, and what did it, you know, do downtown?
Financially, it looks pretty solid based on the data up to fiscal year 2023. The increment revenues, that new money coming in, grew steadily. Started around $130,000 the first year, up to $200,000 annually by 2023.
So property values were consistently going up, as planned.
Seems like it. And that early $820,000 balance gave them flexibility. They issued $600,000 in bonds in 2019, well within their $1 million limit. And the projections showed the TIF income would cover those bond payments more than 1.3 times over, a healthy safety margin.
Okay, financials sound decent. What about the physical impacts? What can people actually see downtown that came from this TIF?
Some pretty tangible stuff. About $400,000 went into streetscape projects, new sidewalks, better lighting, landscaping, things that make the area nicer to walk around in.
Facade grants.
Another $250,000 went into those, directly helping businesses improve their buildings look.
And did that translate into broader economic improvements? More businesses, more activity?
The report suggests so. A reported 15% increase in downtown occupancy rates, fewer empty buildings, and it apparently attracted about $2.5 million in related private investment.
Wow, that's pretty good leverage for the public funds.
It is. Plus, a nice historical preservation piece. 12 historic landmarks in the district got restored through a one-to-one private matching grant program. Shows community buy-in.
Yeah, it really sounds like it helped spark a partnership to revitalize the area.
That seems to be the story for the downtown TIF, a compelling case for urban revitalization.
But Shawnee also has that other TIF, right? The industrial park one. Sounds very different.
Completely different scale and focus, yeah. This one's much newer, created October 2022 by Ordinance CS 2022-10. Covers a bigger area, about 150 acres. Has a longer 25-year term, based on a 2021 valuation of $12 million.
And a bigger financing authorization.
Right, up to $2 million. And the goal here isn't fixing up old buildings, it's attracting new industry, creating jobs, new construction, new infrastructure.
Makes sense for industrial park. What are the first steps there? Was there public input?
Similar process. A required public hearing was held in January 2023. Four speakers came forward, mostly raising points about practical stuff, infrastructure needs, access to the park, vital for industrial development.
Did the city adjust based on that?
Yeah, they made some minor map adjustments based on the feedback before approving it. Mm-hmm. And a really critical recent step was getting the utility plan approved just this past June 2024. You need water, sewer, power before businesses will commit.
Absolutely essential. How are the financials looking for this newer TIF? Still early days, I guess.
Definitely early days. The initial increment capture for 22-23 was only around $48,000, projected to reach maybe $75,000 by 2025, so just starting to ramp up.
But any early impact? Any signs it's working?
Actually, yes. Even this early, the TIF has apparently helped facilitate bringing in two new tenants, and they're projected to create about 45 new jobs.
45 jobs already. That's pretty significant for a brand new district.
It is. It suggests that just the promise of the TIF and the initial infrastructure planning can start attracting investment pretty quickly, which is exactly the goal.
Fascinating to see the contrast. Okay, so connecting this back, you mentioned the YMCA is on public land with some unique conditions. What's the deal with public land and leases in Shawnee? This sounds complicated.
It is pretty interesting. A significant chunk of land in Shawnee, including where the YMCA and the Lions Club ball fields are, is actually on what's called FAA-controlled land.
FAA, like Federal Aviation Administration.
Exactly. This land wasn't just regular city property. It was transferred from the U.S. government, specifically the War Assets Administrator, to the city of Shawnee way back in 1947 through something called an instrument of transfer.
Okay, so it came from the federal government after the war, and it probably came with strings attached.
Big strings. Very strict conditions. Primarily, it has to be used for public airport purposes, and the FAA keeps oversight.
And what if the city doesn't follow the rules?
The federal government retains the right to reclaim the land anytime during a national emergency. And, crucially, any subsequent transfers or sales of this land require FAA approval. Breaching the conditions could mean the whole title reverts back to the U.S. government.
Wow. Okay, that's a really big deal. So how does the YMCA operate on this federally controlled land then? Do they own it?
No, they lease it. The YMCA has a long-term lease for about 4.8 acres at 700 W Saratoga Street. It's not new. It extended an original 1964 agreement.
How long is the current lease?
50 years. A memorandum from February 2014 runs until February 2064. And the records show it was granted for a one-time payment of $5,000.
50 years for $5,000. And the Airport Authority keeps an eye on this.
Yep. Minutes from August 2014 Airport Authority meetings show ongoing oversight.
Okay. What about the Lions Club ball fields? The outline mentioned the YMCA is involved there too.
Yes. That's another interesting arrangement. The city granted the YMCA the right to use Lions Club Park for recreation starting back in August 2013.
Use it, not lease the land itself.
Seems like a usage agreement, yeah. It initially ran for a short period, then switched to automatic one-year renewals and the payment, a nominal $1 per year.
$1. Why did the YMCA take that over?
Well, this happened right after the city revoked its previous agreement with the Shawnee Youth Athletics Association, the SYAA, apparently due to issues like poor maintenance and maybe some financial transparency problems. So the YMCA stepped in.
Okay, so the YMCA took over operations. What are their responsibilities versus the city's under that deal?
The YMCA handles pretty much all the day-to-day maintenance. Game fields, restrooms, concessions, including janitorial, trash, field supplies like chalk and paint. Also minor repairs, fixing sprinklers, light bulbs, clogged toilets.
So they do the upkeep. What's left for the city?
The city handles the big stuff. Major repairs like replacing buildings, roofs, fixing main sewer or waterline breaks, parking lots, painting, fencing. And the city also covers the utility bills, electric, trash, sewer, water for the park.
And there was even a specific deal about a lawnmower.
Yeah, it gets very specific.
Yeah.
The city actually leases a particular Kubota mower city ID number 4586 to the YMCA just for maintaining Lions Club Park.
How much does that lease cost?
Also just $1 a year. Started July 1st, 2020, automatically renews for up to 5 years. The YMCA covers fuel, oil, routine maintenance, and all repairs, though they need city approval for major repairs over $300.
Okay, so very detailed partnerships there. But didn't we hear about some discrepancies, maybe transparency concerns specifically around sales of this FAA-controlled land?
Yes, this is where it gets potentially problematic. Mayor Eric Stevens publicly acknowledged that some land on this FAA property had been sold. He mentioned places like the YMCA, Pit Stop Gas Station, the 66 Nations Gas Station, Shawnee Little Theater, the Early Childhood Center.
And he implied they got FAA approval for these sales.
He mentioned seeking FAA approval, yes, but here's the discrepancy.
What do the official records actually show?
Pottawatomie County Assessor records, looking at the 2025 tax year data, show the city of Shawnee still owns the 80-acre parcel that includes Pit Stop, the YMCA, and Oklahoma Jet Works. There's no recorded sale history for these specific parcels in the county records we accessed.
Wait, the mayor says sold, but the county records say the city still owns it. That's not a small discrepancy.
Not at all. It's a significant disconnect.
What are the implications if the records are right and the land wasn't actually sold? Or if it was sold, but without proper approvals or recording?
It raises some serious questions. If sales occurred without FAA approval, that could violate the 1947 transfer conditions. Potentially putting the land title at risk, the feds could technically reclaim it.
Okay, that's huge.
It also raises questions about proper documentation, potential violations of public notice, or competitive bidding requirements if public land was disposed of improperly.
And getting clarity isn't easy.
It seems challenging. Our research noted a substantial fee invoice was presented for retrieving some related records, and that online city minutes were apparently missing for the period after March 2023. That lack of easy access definitely fuels transparency concerns.
That context adds another layer. It's not just about TIF, it's about how public assets are managed overall. And interestingly, there was even an earlier financial interaction with the YMCA, right, before TIF was really in the picture.
Yeah, quick note on that. Back in March 2006, during a capital outlay budget discussion, the YMCA actually requested municipal financial assistance to build a new parking lot. So this history of public-private financial interaction goes back quite a ways.
Okay. Given all these complexities, TIFs, leases, FAA land, potential discrepancies, how is Shawnee navigating financial transparency? What are they doing to make things clear?
Well, they have made some notable efforts. They launched an interactive online dashboard, shawnyuk.org TIF. It supposedly provides real-time fund tracking and grant status.
Okay, a dashboard is potentially much better than just static PDF reports. More accessible.
Exactly. And speaking of reports, detailed TIF schedules are included in the city's big annual financial reports, the CKIFRs. They're under non-major funds, so they are part of the official public record available for review.
Have these funds been audited?
Yes. There was a Deloitte audit mentioned, CS 2019-06, which confirmed the integrity of the TIF funds. Importantly, it also recommended some process refinements, which it seems the city acted on.
Is there an ongoing public forum for this stuff?
There is. Since 2020, they've had an advisory committee specifically for TIF. It holds quarterly public meetings, publishes minutes. It provides a regular place for discussion.
So people can attend, see the minutes.
Yes. Yeah. And minutes from May 2022 even suggested they were thinking about expanding the committee committee to include youth sports representatives. So potentially broadening the input.
That sounds like a decent set of transparency tools.
Yeah.
How have residents reacted to the TIF projects themselves? Do people generally support them?
A resident survey from 2023 specifically about TIF projects showed pretty significant support, about 72% approval, only 10% opposed, and 18% were neutral or unsure.
So generally positive reception in the community?
Seems that way, yeah.
Are there lessons here? What are other cities doing? Any best practices Shawnee could adopt or that other places use?
Sure. Other cities offer good ideas. Moore Park, Oklahoma, for instance, issues semi-annual TIF briefings, more frequent updates. They also tend to use shorter-term bonds, maybe 10 years instead of 20 or 25, which reduces long-term financial risk.
What about more cutting-edge ideas?
Some places are looking at integrating TIF districts with federal opportunity zones to layer incentives, or implementing things like digital tax receipt tracking, so you can see in near real time how money is being spent. Lots of ways to enhance transparency and financial management.
Okay. So this whole YMCA TIF scenario we started with, it really is a perfect illustration of how informal information, maybe some confusion, can swirl around complex public funding. What does this all mean for you, the listener, if you find yourself asking similar questions in your town?
Yeah, it's a great case study. If you hear about public funds being used in ways that seem unclear, or if a project just makes you go, the most effective step is often a formal public records request.
Like that specific request number you mentioned, 25316, you actually file paperwork.
Yes, you formally request specific documents under the state's public records laws. For instance, using that number as a hypothetical example from June 21st, 2025.
And when you make a request like that, how specific should you be? You can't just say, tell me about the YMCA funding, right?
No, be as specific as possible. Mm-hmm. Ask if any TIF funds or bond proceeds have been earmarked or redirected to a particular project. Name the project, like the YMCA Child Care Center. Ask for financial records showing money actually moving.
What else? Internal communications.
Definitely. Request internal communications emails, memos between city entities like city staff, the commission, mayor's office, economic development authority, and the organization in question. Ask for feasibility studies or legal opinions about using TIF funds that way.
And put a date range on it.
Absolutely. Be precise with dates like January 1, 2020 to the present. The more specific you are, the harder it is for them to say the request is too broad or burdensome.
Okay, so a formal request is key. What else can people do?
Review public meeting minutes systematically. Go back several years, maybe to 2021 or earlier in this case. Comb through minutes of city council, planning commission, finance committee meetings. Search for mentions of the funding or the project. Often these are online now and searchable.
But ultimately, the responsibility lies with the city, to be clear, doesn't it?
Yes. The onus really is on the city to be transparent. They should proactively clarify where all the public money for significant projects is coming from, especially these public-private partnerships. Are TIF reimbursements involved? Are there complex financial overlays using TIF money? That kind of clarity is just crucial for maintaining public trust.
We have definitely covered a lot of ground today. We started with that YMCA TIF question and found out, well, that no official district like that exists in Shawnee.
Right. We unpacked how TIF actually works, the base value, the increment, the bonding.
And we looked at Shawnee's real TIF districts, the downtown one, focused on revitalization, and the industrial park one, aimed at job creation. Saw the tangible results, too.
And then dove into the complexities of that FAA-controlled land, the leases, the discrepancies in reported land sales.
It really shows how these seemingly technical financial tools translate into real community changes, fixing up downtowns, maybe bringing new jobs, funding things people need, like childcare centers.
It does. And hopefully understanding these mechanics even just a bit better helps you, our listener, feel more empowered, more knowledgeable about how your own community grows and how public investment works, or sometimes it doesn't work as expected.
Indeed. And maybe it leaves you with a final thought to chew on, something to consider as you look around your own community.
Which is?
How do these powerful targeted TIF funds, focused on specific districts, specific projects, how do they coexist and interact with the city's overall general fund? You know, the fund that pays for police, fire, parks, the essential services for the entire community.
Ah, that's the core tension, isn't it? How do cities make sure these powerful tools for targeted development also align with broader community priorities? And how do they maintain that absolute need for transparency throughout the process?
It's definitely something worth thinking about, maybe prompting you to look into how TIF or similar tools are being used right where you live.
The information is often out there. It's in those public records, those meeting minutes, if you know where to look and what questions to ask.